KFYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stars.
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop? Ratchet, can you take the chorus stop?
Transformers, defenders of truth, robots who fight.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to TFYLP, Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, episode number 281, recorded March 17th, 2018. I am your host, Daron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. Along with me this evening is Rick Alvarez.
Greetings, people of Earth.
Up in the upper little right-hand corner, little dot that won't give him a full picture, Robert.
Hi.
It's pronounced Robert.
Robert.
I don't think that's correct.
X-Zal-X, Mutton Chops, whatever you want to call him. The Big Red Doofus. Oh, wait a minute. Speaking of Big Red Doofus.
What?
Christian.
That was just rude. I can't believe you said that. What a jerk.
They're jealous of the gingerness.
We'll just shove you in one of those empty cases behind you.
Rob's going to have to gang up on him. Two gingers is better than one.
Oh, yeah.
Especially today.
My beard's red.
There you go. Two and a half.
It doesn't look it, but mine is actually two. That's weird. But also is drinking a glass of Guinness on St. Patty's Day. Aaron Archer.
Hey.
Welcome back. We are going to be talking about actually something rather sad today.
Yes, Tomb Raider.
Yeah. No, not Tomb Raider.
I think you said something sad, and it's the first thing that came to mind.
Well, first
Last
I was going
Jedi
to say,
DVD.
We were going to be talking about something sad, and that was Rick's face. But you know,
next time, Gadget.
It's like the Cards Against Humanity card, a sad hand job, you know. off the tracks. But anyway, tonight we're going to be talking about something that's actually been in the news quite a bit for the last several weeks, actually. And that is the closure of Toys R Us. Toys R Us, at least the United States stores are all closing out. Right now, it looks like the Canada stores are still going to be intact, but I don't know how long that's going to last. There is some word that there are some people trying to buy out Toys R Us in order to keep it open in Canada. And then the top performing stores in the United States keep those as well. But I don't think there's been any news on that front. Has anybody heard anything else that I haven't seen?
It's a company called MGA, and they are looking to purchase all, I believe, 60 Canadian Toys R Us, along with the top 200 performing U.S. stores, and continue to operate them as Toys R Us, but there has not been any word since Thursday on how their bid is going.
Now, the reason Toys R Us is going into bankruptcy is, well, they have considerable debt, apparently, to a number of their suppliers, I guess, and lenders, and it's a whole lot of corporate mumbo jumbo that I don't really get the gist of, but
it sounds like the short version is that for 10, 15, maybe 20 years, they've all their money has been spent in constantly paying back this debt and trying to pay down the debt, and so they haven't been able to invest into the stores at all. Mm-hmm. And so the stores have said very stagnant.
Since they got a leverage buyout in 2005, that's what's been going on.
Yeah, it was a profitable, very profitable business, and at that time had very big plans to redo all the stores and change them to a different experience right around that time. And then that all halted when that happened. I remember they were going to make it an interactive store, and you were going to be able to ride the bikes and, you know, play Legos and all that stuff. And it never really came to be.
Which, to a degree, they do that now, but not to the...
Yeah. Not the level the New York store had. You know, that was like the flagship version of it.
Well, the thing is with Toys R Us is that, you know, it's always been like the toy store. Anybody ever, if you mention the word toy store, usually the first thing that would pop in your head is Toys R Us. At least it was for me. Even growing up, you know, Toys R Us was a little bit outshadowed in my area by Children's Palace. Another one that's
never
that's
heard
come
of
and
it.
Gone.
I'm one state south of you, and I've never heard of that.
Yeah, we had that. We didn't have Children's Palace until the 90s.
Yeah.
I had Kitty City.
But, well, the Lexington area, we had a Toys R Us and we had a Children's Palace. And it seemed like Children's Palace was always the place to go in Lexington. But then whenever Children's Palace went out, then Toys R Us, you know, they immediately stepped to the forefront in this area. But nationally and internationally, it's always been Toys R Us. They always had the familiar jingle, you know, I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid. You know, everybody knows it. And I think every one of us, even here on the podcast, can say, you know, we feel that identifies with us in every way, because, you know, I don't want to grow up. I mean, I still collect toys. You know, I still take an active interest in toys. And I got a lot of toys from Toys R Us over the years. So, you know, their mantra is pretty accurate. But with the buyout, it seems that, you know, this ultimate goal was pretty much set in stone whenever they did the buyout. It's like they did it with the intent to basically liquidate all the assets and leave it a shell of what it could have been or what it was supposed to be, and which is sad. You know, anybody, go ahead, Christian.
Yeah, I think what happened in the buyout is that whatever big conglomerate bought them transferred the debt that they had accrued from buying out other things, and it transferred all over to Toys R Us. So Toys R Us then had the burden that everyone else could go on existing.
And what's also terrible about this this sudden, relatively sudden closure, I was reading an article, I believe it was last night or night before last, my working third shift, everything blurs together on me, so the shutdown of Toys R Us and the collapse of it has been so quick. Some analysts say they have never seen one collapse as fast as Toys R Us has. You know, they're basically imploding, and you know it's scary. You know, for the not just the toy business, but I mean, how many other businesses are going to do this? And in addition, with the sudden closure, there's a lot of purchase orders that are not paid for, that are en route to Toys R Us, that vendors are not going to be paid for. You know, I'm sure Hasbro's got a ton of stuff en route to Toys R Us warehouses as we speak that have yet to be paid for. They're on an invoice somewhere, and likely they will never be paid for. You
I spoke to my friend who is a manager at Toys R Us yesterday, and he said as of right now there's no more deliveries, but with the bankruptcy company, basically when they go into liquidation, it's like another company comes in and takes over. They haven't decided whether they're going to continue shipments to the stores yet.
Or just ship it to a liquidation.
Right.
Warehouse.
So it's possible some exclusives might show up during the liquidation sales, or may just sit in warehouses for a year or two before they end up at a TJ Maxx.
Were there any Transformers exclusives
that's how it goes.
That have not been released yet? Or that
Studio Series Thundercracker and Masterpiece Barricade.
Oh.
Masterpiece Ironhide?
I don't know if he was ever announced to go to Toys R Us, actually. I mean, theoretically he would have, but I don't remember hearing that.
Does the movie Masterpieces, do they have any other outlet other than Toys R Us?
Not now, but Ironhide never had the sticker on it when they revealed the packaging, so I don't know.
Yeah, you know, with the whole brand Unity push with Hasbro and Takara, I kind of wonder what that means for that line. Then, I mean, I wonder if another vendor will step up to take it, or
Amazon, or what. Maybe.
I'm hoping it's Amazon.
That's the biggest player I would see. You know, it's like Toys R Us out of the picture. Amazon seems to be the most likely, I guess.
Well, they may pick up those projects that are already done, but that doesn't mean they're going to all of a sudden pick up as many exclusives as Toys R Us would have done.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Those items may show up in your collection, thankfully, but that doesn't mean the future ones will ever find they'll never be invented to have a home.
So the stuff that's currently in design may just
fall by the wayside.
Not go forward. Not go to manufacturing.
Well, the nature of exclusives is they pitch a lot of things to all those companies, and each company has a different spin on what they want out of it, whether it's a main character or a price point or whatever. So they'll still pitch that stuff that might have previously been Toys R Us exclusives, but if it doesn't fit that vendor's process or thought process, then it just won't matter.
Could it be a possibility someone like Big Bad Toy Store? I mean, they have a huge online footprint.
Products that are done can always find an outlet.
Yeah.
But the idea that there'll be a home for future exclusive opportunities won't exist, because the nature, and I don't know if this is when you want to get into it, of why exclusives exist is to fill those long shelves full of product. Yeah. You know, it's not just to give special product to chase for the hardcore collectors. It's a whole part of the structure of how things are purchased, how much is purchased, how deep they get purchased. It's just like an incentive comic book cover at your comic book store, right? If you order 25 of these, you get a blank, or, you know, it's a lot like that. So they just won't exist because they don't need to exist.
Yeah.
Those items, there's no filling that pipeline anymore. So why have an exclusive?
If you bring up Big Bad as a potential holder for it, if I think back to the at least three cases that come to my mind of when Big Bad has done Transformer exclusives, all of them have sat around on their site forever and got heavily clearanced. And it's I know they still have them. It felt like every time it hasn't been good for them.
The Piranha Pottery issue comes to mind.
The most famous one was the Dark Energon repaints from Transformers Prime.
I was thinking about those too.
Thinking about that.
Originally, they were not a Big Bad Toy Store exclusive. I think those were going to go to Walmart, and because they were done, Big Bad just kind of picked them up.
One of those that came to mind was Battle Unicorn.
Mm.
Yeah.
And the Aveo Swerve.
Was the Aveo Swerve a Big Bad exclusive?
The Aveo Swerve was the Chevrolet exclusive. That never had another outlet because there was never any packaging for it.
Until Big Bad got like a couple hundred of them in the end.
That's where I got mine eventually.
The plastic bags?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, at some point, those things get clearanced out after that promotion is done. So they went somewhere. I'm sure there were more toys than people drove those cars to get that exclusive. So, you know, how they get filtered through eventually, you know, is going to happen. But it wasn't initially their exclusives.
So. Yeah, I remember one day at Hasbro, I found a box with a bunch of those Aveos in it. They all had name tags, though, so I didn't know what they were, so I just kind of threw them out.
That box sat around forever.
They had what tag? Oh, the green, no, the, like yeah, the green big tag. Green tags?
There was a box of those that sat around forever.
I had a Mock Kick versus Arcadis that had a green tag on the back, but I sold it. I think Michael Swift actually has it now. But anyway, last week, Aaron, you messaged me and your idea really intrigued me as a different angle on this that a lot of people might not know about or even consider, and that would be the impact of Toys R Us's demise on the industry from within the industry. How will it affect the industry as a whole? And would you like to go into that some now? Or
yeah, I'll try to top line it. I mean, for me, from being so long into a process, I'll start with saying I've heard this from other people as well. I mean, when I started, we were still selling the Kmart pretty heavily, and Target really wasn't big yet and all this. So the idea that, you know, these things do have cycles is interesting. From internally, it's easy to go, okay, it's 10, 15% of the market. There's other places that'll, you know, you can still get product, blah, blah. That's fine. But, you know, the idea that it's an exclusive toy store is kind of a place where toy companies can explore wider ranges of product lines and explore new opportunities. Until they're proven, it's hard to get into the Walmarts and the Targets in a way. And I wonder how it affects the smaller mid companies who, you know, like I'll just say like a Moose that has a lot of different types of product. You know, they have a lot of shelf space at a big Toys R Us. At a Walmart, they artificially become a much smaller company because they don't get as much shelf space. So like the demise of a toy store that dedicates itself to toys and aisles, wide aisles of ideas, good, bad, and different. That losing that will slowly change over time the types of things we see. And I think I'll stop there to have a general, you know, if you guys have general thoughts on that.
That's actually the same thing a friend of ours, Steve Drucker, told me the other day. What's going to happen to the little toy guy?
You might get one item in, you know, and that's great. Whereas Toys R Us let you kind of make 8 items, 12 items. You might get 2 into a Walmart. That affects how your company can grow. That affects a lot of things.
Well, for example, like the commemorative series reissues, you know, they had the entire line of commemorative series. You know, how many different products were released under that banner? You know, whereas
they had the shelf space, you know,
and whereas
they were happy to fill it.
Well, they had those, and then they had whatever was current at the time in addition to those. So you had so much choice. But whereas if you went to like Walmart or Kmart or Target, all you would have would be, I think at the time, what was it, Armada that was on the shelf? Maybe Energon? So, you know,
the mindset of a Walmart or a Target, and this isn't bad or good or whatever, but take all the logos off all the packaging in the whole store. You know, they just have a small section of toys, and those toys have to be certain as profitable as the underwear and the motor oil and the planting soil and everything else, right? It becomes more of a profit equation for those other stores versus the love of or promotion of kids' entertainment, kids' fun, kids' action, development, you know, and no one's talking about Babies R Us either. I mean, and I think that's kind of a shame too, because they're caught up in this a bit, and you know, a lot of people use that for a lot of good things as well.
The baby registry.
But I digress. Yeah. But it's all part of the same thing, right? Development of children and what they're into and what inspires them. And so anyway,
you know, I think that Slack, you know, I don't have the kind of, you know, industry insider view that you would have, Aaron, or that Rick would have, you know, but from an outsider looking in, I haven't bought anything at Toys R Us realistically in years. And as you can see behind me, that's a very small portion of my collection. You know, and I have two kids. I got two girls, and we buy toys for them. And we don't buy them at, or very, very rarely buy something at Toys R Us for them. You know, we might, just for the experience for one of my daughters to kind of get the use of cash, like, here's some money, we'll go to the store and you can spend it. But she was honestly just as happy at Target as she is at Toys R Us, which is kind of interesting. But, you know, as the internet continues to rise, brick and mortar is going to kind of continue to have to find its place in the world. And I feel that with the internet being out there, you don't need the huge expense of a toy store to get your idea out there. You know, there's, you know, Kickstarters and, you know, Indiegogos. There's a lot of ways to get your small, interesting toy idea out there. You know, and I know some of the people on the call have had experience with Kickstarter. You know, there's a lot more out there these days than just, if I can't get into Walmart, then I'm dead. Maybe I could go to Toys R Us, they're more open to it. It does suck to see an avenue shut, but, you know, it's the whole close a door, you open a window thing. And I feel that there's a lot out there. And then with social media advertising out there as well, word of mouth getting it out there, I think
I don't disagree with that. It explodes it back out into those individual little things. So if I'm looking for wood trains, I'll find the wood trains. If I'm looking for, you know, Paw Patrol stuff, I'll find that too. You're right. But having one place, an aggregator where you know you could at least go, it has certain value. I don't discount it. I mean, I've probably been to Toys R Us more in the last couple months than I had in years prior. So it has its faults, and we probably should talk about some of those as well. But there's something about the idea that they would put more things on the shelf than you'll ever get anywhere else. That at least keeps a further barrier from only having big blockbuster, surefire, number one hit show kind of crap thrown at us. That's my mentality of it. I like the idea that there's a barrier where calico critters can live and all this stuff that Toys R Us helped, in my mind, defend. But, you know, other places can do that too.
What do you feel about, you know, a place for small places to go? What do you feel about, like, specialty stores? You know, like, you might find some of the stuff at, like, you know, I hate to say it, but, like, Hot Topic, you know, or even, you know, comic book stores.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
if you have those still.
I mean, I don't know what Mattel's doing these days. I don't think most of us do. But Hasbro has always had an issue getting into the smaller, that third, fourth tier level, right? If it's not, they don't do anything past Diamond. And if you order through Diamond, you get those toys 2-3 months after everyone else does. So they probably could improve their smaller market distribution of core figures and collector type things to get into comic book stores better, get into maybe those smaller market toy stores or specialty toy stores. Absolutely. But, you know, that's how they're going to have to figure out where to get that revenue. Do they spend time and effort to develop all those new channels for little money but a lot of contact, or do they just kind of double down on, you know, Sam's Club and something else and go that route? You know, who knows, but they can do it if they want to.
Christian, you have a thought on along these lines?
Well, we were talking about Toys R Us being an aggregator for toys, but for me, it's never been that. I mean, there's definitely a variety, but every time I've been to Toys R Us, probably in the past decade, I see the same products languishing on shelves. They don't have a lot of turnover, at least not around me. Maybe you guys are different, but when I go there, I never expect to find new stuff.
Well, it's more wave one.
Well, it's a good example is whenever I got my Cybertron Primus, well, the I keep wanting to call it Primus, but I think this release was just called simply Cybertron, the blue Cybertron.
Yes, yep, G2 Primus.
Yeah. The way I paid for it was I had two gift cards that I'd received for Christmas. I received a $50 gift card for this past Christmas, and then I still had a $50 gift card from Christmas before that. Both of them to Toys R Us.
Nothing to buy.
Because literally, there was nothing to buy. Every time I would go in, it would be like the exclusives would have a naked space on the shelf because either a scalper that worked at the store had already cleared out the stock and put it on eBay for like double the price, or they never got it. Case in point, the Year of the Horse stuff never came to
never here either.
One of the Toys R Us's in this area. The other one got some, but the other Year of the Horse or the other Toys R Us didn't get them. Or if they did, it's very, very small shipment.
Yeah, and, but think about Toys R Us from the point of view of some old little kids, collector with little kids. Mm-hmm. All right, so I go to Toys R Us, and now the way I collect Transformers is a little differently from other people. So I look at the big boys Transformers, then I head over and I look at my Rescue Bots, but in between, I'm stopping to look at the Barbie figures for Casey. I'm stopping to look at the Peppa Pig stuff for Maddie. I'm looking at the Power Wheels. I'm looking at the bikes for all of them. And when I bring the girls with me, we're there for a while. It's a walking experience. You're not going to get that at Walmart. You're not going to get that at Target.
Well, I fully get that because and by contrast, you know, whenever I go in, I would go in by myself. I would go in for a specific thing. I was going in to look at the Transformers, and occasionally I'd go back and check out like the Legos and see what was new in there. But I'm not a big Lego guy, so you know, just to see what they had. But whenever we would go in, like with my girlfriend's daughter. We would check out the Transformers. Then we would go around and look at the Shopkins. She's really huge on the Shopkins right now. That's like, you know, I don't get it. They're like the
Swish
little...
Swish Delish.
Yeah. they look like erasers.
My daughter has a crap ton of them.
Yes. So does Jasmine. She has a butt ton of them. You know, and they're neat, but they're essentially erasers. That's what it looks like, but then again, you know, whenever I was much younger than her, my dad referred to He-Man toys as little rubber men and rubber dolls. You know, he grew up in the Depression era, and
he's not wrong.
He didn't care about that stuff. I was wasting my time and wasting my energy, you know, but I saw magic.
We are not ones to judge.
No. But you're right, Rick. I mean, you know, the shopping habit changed, you know, depending on, you know, if you had kids in tow, you know, my 5-minute trip into Toys R Us would turn into, we'd be in there 20, 30, 45 minutes to an hour, you know, looking at things, you know.
So that's a positive for some, a negative for others.
That's 100% negative for me. I don't like children. Staying in there that long with children around is just torture for me.
Uh-oh. Well, it's hard to go buy a gift and hide it because you're at a toy store if you're mm-hmm. with your kids. Well, that's except a factor.
We've done all of our Christmases almost top to bottom through Amazon for years now.
Yeah.
You know, or I know, or honestly, we might order some stuff from Toys R Us online or some from Target online as well. But, you know, our brick and mortar presence, you know, with our family with two girls is pretty small. We don't do it too much anymore.
Well,
we had the same thing with Toys R Us gift cards. And so the like 2 weeks ago, I was telling my wife, I was like, you need to dig up those Toys R Us gift cards. We got to use them. And yeah. We bought some video games with them, which you could buy anywhere.
Well, if they had not had the Cybertron there, I would likely have wound up getting a Nintendo Switch. That was my other thing. Because literally, I mean, someone, I think, shared, it might have been on the TFYOP group. It might have been on the... Kentucky Transformers Group. But there was a picture. Somebody took a picture of the offering of Transformers at the St. Matthew's Toys R Us, which is the one that's closest to me. And it, you know, I think there might have been like a handful of Titan Masters and some of the One Step Changers from the last night.
Yep, that's why I saw my most recent trip.
And they still had a couple of the Primus or the Cybertrons.
Mine still had a bunch of movie, like, sized guys. Voyager, like.
This movie, Two Twins.
Yeah.
Wow. They're still sitting there. Now, I have walked into a Toys R Us, not this particular one, but others. I know the one in Lexington. Sometimes you could go in there and randomly see something from, say, 5 years ago put out on the shelf. Like, they found a case of it and would throw it out on the shelf. And you're like, wow, you know, this is lucky. You know, it's just weird how Toys R Us would do those things. And it just... I don't remember a whole lot before the buyout. I do remember shopping Toys R Us before the buyout. But since the buyout, I don't recall a favorable shopping experience at Toys R Us. But despite that, I still have a fond feeling.
When you reach back into the 80s memories?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, clearly they were doing something wrong because they had a big staff in New Jersey designing in-house product of designers and marketers and all that, let alone all the people that run a store. And, you know, in spite of all that effort, something didn't work, you know, whether we didn't like going there, they didn't dress it up, they didn't make it clear, but, it is kind of peculiar to me. Like, it wasn't like they, you know, just slow rolled it completely. They just didn't do it right.
Do you remember the X design? Of the aisles, they arranged them into a huge X.
That was part of that new format. They were going to have a central hub, and then everything was going to be in zones that you could constantly explore to the goal of what you just said, Rick. Like, you go and you can kind of be there for a while, kind of event entertainment. You were supposed to then, I think those same ones had some shelving display up in the middle of those X's. And, you know, it was supposed to be more of an event to go to the toy store, right? And I think they were going to have birthday parties and do some of those things as well at one point. And that never came to pass. And then those X's were weird.
It seems like I remember hearing of some stores changing over to the X pattern, but it's entirely possible that the ones, the ones here in Louisville and the one in Lexington that I went to, it's entirely possible that they had it for a while, but I don't recall it. I remember the shelves.
Yeah, I was probably spoiled too because I know the one closest to Hasbro was by default set up to be the most modern looking Toys R Us, right? So if any employee went to a Toys R Us, they saw the sweetest Toys R Us you could see.
That is true.
Yeah, so that Attleboro Toys R Us, that's where the X's were that I saw. So that's kind of funny. I didn't think of that until just now.
Did they always make sure that it had the freshest product too?
Yeah. Right, Rick.
I remember sometimes there were occasions I couldn't find something in the employee store, and I'd go to Toys R Us and be there. But the Walmart, you had to go in front of Walmart before you got to Toys R Us. Hasbro, yep. Walmart, Toys R Us were all on the same road. The Walmart was pretty good too.
Yeah, I don't think I was ever in that Walmart.
So, I'm curious. Do Toys R Us is gone? You know, a bunch of reasons. Do we think that there is a market for a new brick and mortar toy store that could be successful? You know, with so many things shifting online. Like I said, I don't do my toy shopping in stores anymore, period. I get it all online. I'll get it from, you know, Orson at Captured Prey, or I'll get it from Big Bad as a fallback typically. You know, and that's where I get my toys. You know, if Hasbro let me buy it direct, I would do it. You know, if I could get single figures.
100%, yeah.
You know, yeah.
Well, those are probably the decisions Hasbro's trying to figure out. I mean, up until now, you know, they, big companies, they don't want to really also be the sellers, right? They make their deals and their profits by working with, you know, the brick and mortars. But more and more, I think they are going to have to take destiny in their own hands and talk to more and more people, however that happens.
I mean, you know, the thought as an internet, pretty much an internet only buyer, the thought of going to, you know, a big toy store that's kind of an experience and being able to check stuff out and to take my kids and have fun with them while I'm there, you know, kind of in some way, you know, kind of share the toy collecting hobby, even though we're collecting different things. Although she loves Titan Returns, my 7-year-old, she loves the Headmasters. Any new toy I get, she's like, is it a Headmaster? And I'm like, no, those are kind of done now.
My 6-year-old loves sad. She loves asking if the head comes off of figures.
Yeah.
She loves that.
But
it's a great,
you know, like, that sounds appealing to me. I still don't know if I could make time to go that often for a store to be profitable, at least not for me. But it sounds like, you know, Christian's kind of more on that lane with me. But it sounds like the rest of you guys still go to the brick and mortars more often to do your hunts.
Here's the thing. Like, comic book stores are dying out. There's, 1,100 some comic book stores left in the country. And yeah. And it's going to get to a point where we're not going to have enough comic book stores to support the comic book industry as it exists right now. And we're going to lose.
It's probably already
half the titles forever.
Well,
and we're at that point now on a macro level with Toys R Us, where maybe it's the shopping experience, or maybe it's the incursion of video games into lives versus actually playing with toys and riding bikes and doing crafts. The world is a more digital place now.
I think it's more along the lines of a online shopping experience. The ease of online shopping is killing the brick and mortar. We know that Walmart's their bottom line has been hurt by Amazon tremendously. That's been documented a lot within the news. I know I'm pulling a number out of my ass right now, but it seemed like $4-point-some-odd billion that Walmart lost to Amazon in just the last 5 to 10 years. You know, that seems very reasonable and realistic, considering if you think how many people like Robert, like myself, you know, I've ordered just random stuff off of Amazon as opposing to going to Walmart and get it. But, well, not just because it's cheaper, but because they bring it right to my front door. I don't have to go get it, you know.
But you know what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it would cost other places. And so you can make that option.
Yeah.
But what if you didn't know what you were looking for and didn't know how big the package sizes were for different price points, or didn't know how complex a certain thing was, or felt, you know, I'm not making the case that internet is bad, right? That no, we yeah. all buy our stuff.
It's a good question, though.
I went through years without buying anything at a store, but, the tactile nature of surprise and, oh, look at this, I'm going to get this for Jimmy, you know, that any store gives you, brick and mortar, you know, is exciting. That last minute purchase, the impulse purchase,
yeah.
the shut me up toy, all of these things operate completely on seeing them and feeling them and shaking them and going, is this the value I want to pay, or will this, you know, take care of the issue? You know, and that's what brick and mortar should give you. We want to touch these things, because if you don't know it exists, you'll never know to look for it. That's how I feel about bookstores. I used to love going to the bookstore. I bought all kinds of crazy design books. They all closed up. I don't buy books anymore because I don't know what's out there.
I think that's where they're
not all there for me to cherry pick through and, you know, touch and stuff. And so a whole part of my my kind of hobby, my visual interests, has fallen off considerably. So I don't know how that translates to toys eventually, but it might.
For, again, you know, for my family, that's where I think the internet has some room to do, but it's also, I think, made a lot of inroads in that. I can search for, you know, robot toy, and, you know, Amazon will give me all kinds of stuff. It's honestly, searching for stuff on Amazon almost kind of has the opposite problem of too much choice. Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried to buy a broom on Amazon? It's really difficult to buy a broom on Amazon. There's so many brooms. It's like, I just want a damn broom, one that isn't going to fall apart when I get it in the door. And when you sell it to 10,000 people and all of them give their reviews on it, somebody's broom broke the second they got it. I guarantee you. But, you know, I do think it's getting there to be able to give that information about, you know, reviews, aggregate reviews, so you get an idea of it. And at least for the toy aspect, you know, YouTube videos and video reviews, tabletop reviews are huge. There's, you name any brand, you know, even Shopkins, you know, they're doing box openings, and you can't touch it yourself. You can't hold it in hand and see how it is, but you're going to see somebody with it. They're comparing it to the other toys, and they're telling you about it live while you can see it. So I think
you're talking about
some of that.
You're talking about the future that exists today. I mean, you are, you know, if you put all those things together, eventually a company might, you know, you're going to be able to virtually interact with it and understand what it does and how it plugs into your other products. And and companies are going to have to come up with speed probably with that, but you're living in the modern sense of it all. Absolutely.
I'll tell you, you know, since I've been kind of the Debbie Downer, like, I'm not sad Toys R Us is gone. Aside from the, I'm a toy collector in another avenue. I know that's bad, you know, but if there was a store I could go to, and cover your ears, Aaron, where I could check out third-party products before I bought them in hand, that would probably be pretty interesting to me. And I know Orson...
I'm sure it would be.
you know, and that's even with the YouTube videos that, you know, yeah, I can find out everything about it, but sometimes it would be cool to be able to kind of see them there. There's definitely value there. I don't know if it's enough value in it to fund the really expensive cost of owning a store, a physical store, and having it up and running.
Yeah.
Well, you know, is whenever you talk about, like, bring it back to Transformers, you know, the brick and mortar aspect of it, I can relate to the fact of, well, right now I have all of Wave 2 of Power of the Primes pre-ordered at Capture Prey with Orson. With the exception of, there was, I think, three figures out of the entire second wave that I did not pre-order, simply because I'm like, I'm not entirely sure I want that toy. And I leave it up to seeing it in a store. I want to see it in a store, hold it in my hands, look at it, and decide whether or not I want it. That was Alita 1, Moonracer, and... let's see, I think Hubcap. And I wound up getting Hubcap. But Tailgate. I have... What's that?
Tailgate?
Oh, yeah, Tailgate. I don't know why I call him Hubcap. But Tailgate. Now, the first wave, I did the same wave. Starscream. I didn't like the way Starscream looked in pictures. I wanted to see it in hands. Picked it up in store. I hated it. It was the ugliest Starscream I've seen in years. You know, the head is super tiny. The proportions are terrible.
Oh, and by the way, Aaron,
I put it right back on the shelf.
I know you're a retired man and you're a family man now. You got to tell Hasbro to stop it with the full stickers. Those got to go. They just can't happen anymore. Jesus.
The what stickers?
The foil,
the foil stickers.
Oh.
They are miserable.
I don't mind if I have to place them myself, but they need to be better quality.
That comes from John Warden, who's a G.I. Joe guy, who, you know, G.I. Joe, you would sticker your vehicle up.
I'm not against stickers. I'm against pre-applied foil stickers that are thin as hell and are crap.
Yeah, I get Reaper labels all the time and put them on myself, but the ones we get now is awful.
Yeah, not my rodeo, man. Not my monkeys.
Send some emails, angry emails. You're Aaron Archer. Don't they know who you are?
They don't care. They don't care.
It's like, do you know who I am?
Most people who know who he is don't work there anymore.
But the, you know, the, going back to it though, it's like, you know,
those on-the-chance purchases, it helps.
Yeah,
humans are
weird. It does.
And we like
it
being
does.
Able to see it.
And I'm not sitting there saying that just to bash the Starscream figure, but I was using it as an example. It was something that I wanted to see in person, and then whenever I finally did see it in person, I'm like, okay, I've seen this figure, I've held this figure, I've seen it up close, I don't like it. Or on the antithesis of that, I've seen the Alita 1, and the proportions are a little bit better, even though it's the same mold. The proportions are a little bit better on that one. But I didn't have the cash at the time to pick that one up. So I will pick it up the next time I see it. And that's, you know, it helped sway my decision seeing it in person. And to me, that's how brick and mortar can help.
I was just gonna, you know, with your example here, you can't do this really with online stores as much, or not with specialty stores like Captured Prey or Big Bad, but you know, you can order whatever you want from Target or Walmart or Eustica Toys R Us, and if you don't like it, you can return it. And you know what? You can honestly buy it from Orson at Captured Prey and return it to Target with a driver's license return if you don't like it. I know that's kind of, you know, minorly unethical, but you know, there are, if you don't like what you get, you can return stores because most places, they want you in the store.
Yeah.
And if even just doing a return gets you in there, you're like, eh, I'll go pick up a few things while I'm here. And you're definitely going to hit the toy aisle anyways to see what they got because you're there. So, you know, those options exist too.
So your relationship with your collection isn't the thrill of the hunt as much then, because you go for what you want and that's that. I do know there is examples, and maybe these are older examples, but you know, we used to be more into the hunt.
Yes.
And it was like,
yeah,
who found what and who drove how far, how many stops, right? We all have those stories and have heard
those. That's my life. I'm still hanging on to that.
And I remember when G.I. Joe, before they came out with the full anniversary figures, with the other O-ring set of figures, I don't remember what their names were. And the line stopped and it became like a Toys R Us exclusive online or something. And even though those figures sold at a certain clip, they were no longer part of a hunt. Therefore, they weren't as interesting and they didn't do as well. They just kind of, none of those fans wanted those figures. I'm not going to debate whether they were right figures or whatever they promoted, right? But that loss of the thrill of the hunt helped kill, or you know, helped kill that part of the Joe line, and then it had to be reinvented into a much better thing. Anyway, that's for another podcast. But that was a lesson I learned from certain sectors of collecting, that thrill of the hunt was as much a part of anything as, you know, that was as much of the experience as getting the damn thing.
We've actually covered the thrill of the hunt on the podcast, and it is something that has evolved over time.
Yeah.
You know, even in the last decade to 15 years, you know, it's
so with fewer stores, yeah. I suppose that died out. You know, no,
well,
KB.
A large part of it is fewer stores and the rising prices and gas. And sure. You know, I'm all getting right. older.
We don't need to cover it again then. But yeah. It's all part of that too.
Yeah. But then also there's time. You know, I'm getting older, and my time is not as much as it used to be when I was, say, in my early 20s. You know,
it was just funny when me and my wife, we've been married about 12 years, and I remember when we first started dating. You know, we didn't have any kids. It was just us. We used to go out and go toy hunting together all the time, you know, but then over time, you know, it just shifted away. It's like, I can just order it online.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, why bother getting out anymore? And the first few times I did kind of miss that. It used to be a thing we did, but you know, we move on into other things. You know, the world has turned.
Well, it's one of the things.
See, I like to buy
except for Rick
and Mortar, because if I buy something online, she sees that. And if I buy something at Target, then I can buy other things and hide it amongst that.
That's a whole other podcast. Yeah,
that's a big
podcast.
Well, I mean, you know,
that's the subject for next week. How to hide your purchases, like, from your SO.
Yeah, that's like getting the pre-dinner at the McDonald's on your way home because you don't want the meal the wife is cooking, or she's not going to give you enough. So you have the free meal that she don't know nothing about.
She's got me on a diet, so I eat 5 milkshakes before I get home.
And you eat just a little bit and say, man, that was good, honey, but I'm full.
Well, just cut me a little piece.
Yeah.
I'm doing better. I'm cutting it down.
Guilty. But, you know, that's something, too, that we, you know, like for Rob's been to several of these. We have a Kentucky or Midwest Transformers Collectors meetup. We try to have them once a month, and we're trying to grow it to a point where it's kind of like a toy show, but it's not. You know, it's more or less a gathering of friends where we have the camaraderie that we had, like whenever we were doing the toy hunts. You know, you'd get together with two or three of your friends and drive all over God's creation looking for toys. You know,
I thought you were going to say you'd see the same shady characters every time you went out, and so they became friends.
That too. That too. But, you know, usually it was like, you know, I know, say 10 years ago, it was myself and Insane Galvatron and a couple other people from TFW that we would get together in Lexington, and we would hit up Toys R Us and the comic book shops and every Walmart and Target in the entire city, you know, and it would be an all day thing. You know, lunch would be involved. And it's just three or four of us just getting together, having a good time, talking about toys all day long, looking for toys, you know, walking in there and gawking at, you know, what was there. And I don't know how many times I picked up a toy that wasn't a Transformer because somebody else got something and they're like, hey, this is cool. And I look at it and I'm like, yeah, I want one of those too. So I get one.
You fight over that one figure that the only one's on the shelf. You have to figure out who gets it.
That happened a time or two.
Whoever reaches it first, man.
Yeah, that happened a time or two.
Licked it. It's mine.
But, you know, one of the things we're trying to do with or would like to do with the collectors meetup is bring back the camaraderie that we had, like going to the brick and mortar stores. And Orson, being a vendor himself, helps a lot because he can actually bring wares from his store, or we can go to his storage unit where all of his stuff is. And not only can we sit around, talk about toys, play card games, but we can also buy toys right there. And that's really cool. I know, you know, the last meetup that we had at his storage unit, we sat around and played Cards Against Humanity, ate, you know, pizza and nachos, and I think he had a LG Jinrai on there with a lot of the upgrade sets and everything. And people could pass it around the table and mess with it and like, hey, this is cool. You know, I really like that. It's like it gives you the enjoyment of the hunt, but you really don't go anywhere. You're just going to a central place.
I have to drive 3 hours. Talk for yourself.
Well, that's when you put together a Tennessee meetup. But still, you know, going back to Toys R Us, you know, what kind of void from within? What is the ultimate, Aaron, in your opinion? Right now, it's just conjecture. What do you think will be the result of Toys R Us's void?
Let me put the question another way, Aaron. Put you on the spot.
Yeah. All right.
How many people are going to lose their jobs, and when do the layoffs start?
You know, I don't know. I don't think it's catastrophic in that regard. I think all the companies will have to be tighter on their overall number of items they make per brand. They'll still explore all the same types of innovation and opportunities. So that aspect, I don't know if much changes. in the short term, you know, certainly, you know, there's going to be some just a little bit of fat to cut, but I don't know if that's in headcount or just how you manage the headcount on what projects are more a priority over others. Because I got to believe that the Targets and the Walmarts are going to just double down on the big bets. So that means more Batman, you know, more Lego, more Star Wars, more Marvel, less, you know, just random things, new things, kind of off to the edge things. They'll be more opportunistic maybe around new ideas that just come out of nowhere, but because that's incentive to them. They get a deal with all that. But so I don't know. I don't know if there's going to be a bunch of layoffs. I think for the smaller companies, there definitely could be. The mid-sized companies, I think, because those lines, like I said, the SKUs that pay those employees are now kind of artificially getting smaller without the shelf space of a Toys R Us. So you don't need as many people working on extra SKUs of a given mid-range product line is one example. But there's a lot of stuff already in the pipeline. So that creates a glut that can be either redistributed to other stores or, you know, we got to cut costs quick, and that might cause some people. But I don't know. I don't know.
I've been thinking a lot about NECA.
Yeah.
Because there's basically two avenues of distribution for NECA.
Yeah.
There is Toys R Us.
That's a perfect example Diamond. For me of a company in a tough spot. They yeah. work their way up to get into the big leagues and get more exposure. And now they've just lost that. And all that, you know, Toys R Us doesn't just order 10,000, right? They order 100,000 or whatever. So that's a perfect example I see of this issue for a smaller company. It does great work, great product line, but where do they put
Could
it?
You see
do
a
they,
company
how do
like
they pay their employees, you know?
Could you see a company like that that has good product and good ideas being absorbed by, say, Hasbro for a further
No, those are profitable cuz they're small, you know, and when you can get into these, you know, channels to distribute wider, that's when these smaller companies can make a lot of money. They're not trying to, you know, become too big too fast in some cases. I mean, some of these, like NECA, that's a, you know, those are heartfelt people making those products. You know, that's not a marketing scheme.
And those are licensed products. It's not like Hasbro what? Couldn't eventually get that license yeah. later on without owning
yeah.
the company.
Yeah. And I'm not saying this with NECA. I don't know these deals, but you know, to get the deals, you have to demonstrate you have the ability to get into so many, you know, doorways. So a company like Toys R Us going away might hurt. It just hurts all the channels, you know, because there's now fewer places to demonstrate you can get your this line on the shelf. You know, 20th Century Fox wants to make deals with good people. They're going to get stuff out in this example.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. So
I buy some NECA products, but all of mine have been from NECA direct, like, you know, on Big Bad, like when Big Bad carries it.
Yeah. And that's probably, I mean, if I can, as a toy designer, you know, if you want to support great product, go ahead and buy it from, if you can, directly from NECA or, you know, even Lego really, you know, because you're directly supporting that effort. Hasbro, it's a little tougher to do, right?
They got the barge up right now. I don't know if it's going to succeed, but
yeah, that's how they're going to.
What's it about halfway through on the Kickstarter?
It's like 2,700.
18 days left on it.
17 days.
17 days.
And they were going for 5,000 like that.
Yeah, they're just barely over half.
Yeah, I decided I wasn't.
That might be the momentum, but that's kind of cool. I like it.
It's kind of weird to me to see that because I never thought something like that would have been possible when we were there. That somebody would have agreed to that business idea to put that money in development of it and then launch it.
Doing the ad-ats and stuff. You know, they were putting some money into some of those items.
Yeah, but you knew the ad-at.
This is to me the next logical step, you know, to make sure they get their money back. I mean, because I've said this before on this thing. I mean, the money it cost to tool Metroplex, you know, was significant, and you know, a percentage of Hasbro's overall tooling budget for that year, because it was so damn big. You know, that's a capital expense, and you know, capital C. So things like that Jabba barge, you know, if they can get that funding, it totally makes it worth it. But if they don't get it, that bill is huge, and to not know you'll sell them, it's difficult.
You know, I hope that it's successful just to give more future for that type of stuff. I don't collect Star Wars, but I would, as a collector, and Hasbro has properties that I care about, and you know, I want to see them use that avenue more and more. You know, collectors know they can get it. You don't have the stress of, oh, is it going to sell out or whatever.
If this thing does well, you know, you're maybe a step or two away from getting an ARC that, you know, is big and opens up that G1 guys can fit
in. Where would I put it?
That is not out of the realm of possibility if this thing works. If it doesn't work, then they're not going to keep looking for a reason.
Yeah, if it doesn't work with Star Wars guys, is it going to work with Transformers guys?
Yeah,
and if it doesn't work with Star Wars, are they going to even try to get embarrassed again?
Yeah.
Takara just did something similar with Grandmax, where they had to get a certain number of orders to make the Grandmaxes, and then the extension goal was you got the Pretender shell for grand. We didn't get that goal, but we did get Grandmax in general, and he's coming out the end of the month. I'd like to see more stuff like that. It's a smaller scale. It was, you know, 300 rather than what's Jabba's barge? 500?
5,000.
It's 5,000?
Yeah.
It's $500.
No. Sorry, I thought you meant 5,000
pre-orders.
No, jeez. No. 300 bucks over 500 bucks. It's a lot easier to swallow. Plus, the tooling's already there. You know, everyone wants Grandmax. Everyone wants Brave Max or Metro Titan next. So I hope they continue to do this kind of model.
Metro Titan. I still want a Metro Titan. I mean,
if you guys are going to invest in third party items at those prices, then there's no reason if they opportunity
exactly
give you the right opportunity.
See, that's one of the things I think.
It's all about design.
Well, yeah, they might not do full Transformers that way, but hell, what the heck do I know?
Well, that's one of the things I think.
I see the ARC and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that's
one of the things I think, though, that as far as Transformers go, the Transformers fandom would be more on board something along this line as opposed to Star Wars fans, because we do have third party and we do, as a fandom, spend a lot of money on third party, very expensive third party items. Now, it has gotten better over the last several years where, you know, some third party items are on par in price with official product, but you know, then there's still like the Omega Supreme, the Fans Toys Terminus Giganticus, over $300 for, you know, one huge figure. Don't really have that with a Hasbro product right now outside of import, you know? It does get expensive, and the fans have been known to extend their wallets a little bit more than I would think.
Well, there's like an escalating thing going on with, you know, collecting, whether it's the high end collectors or, you know, whatever, or families' purchase power. But you know, there's high end Lego sets now, toy sets. You know, there's $300, $400, $500 is seemingly not a barrier to doing it as much as it once was.
$800.
When I started, if you made an item that was more than $60, $75, I mean, I was part of the Batman and Rob or Batman Forever Batcave, which was a crazy giant monstrosity, trying to redeco that. But, you know, if it was over $60, it wasn't going to sell. You know, it was, get the heck out of here. You know, you're breaking someone's bank, you know, that was the attitude. And so to see how they can do it now, I mean, geez, $500 for a Lego set is nothing these days for the right Lego set. Transformers should be able to support such things.
I saw a Lego Technic set the other day. It was a Mac semi, that you could assemble. It has a working engine, like a moving engine in it. The pistons work. This thing is amazing. I looked it up on Amazon just to see how much this set was. It's like a near 3,000 piece set, and it's $189. And you can turn it into a semi with a trailer that has it's got like support arms. It has like this big box that it like sets it off to the side, or you can reassemble it into a garbage truck. And I'm like, this thing is cool as a trucker. I would really, really enjoy this set, I think. But then I see that price tag and I'm like, $189. I'm not that into it. But for a transformer, $189, sure, gimme. You know, it's
for the right one. If it's the right thing for the right money, definitely.
Yeah, and it's weird. You know, I guess I'm just.
I dropped $250 on Masterpiece Dinobot. With I know a lot of people were pissed about that price, but I was not one of them.
Oh, the Velocigaptor.
Yeah. I mean, I was just all about it.
No, sir.
Now, I mean, if I still collected Beast figures, I probably would be on it too. I'm still sitting here waiting on Masterpiece Galvatron and some of the others, you know. But let's get
I
back.
I got Sovereign last week. There is no need for Masterpiece Galvatron anymore.
I have Sovereign, and if there was an official Masterpiece Galvatron, I would buy it too.
Sovereign isn't cartoon accurate enough for me.
Your mom's not cartoon accurate enough for me.
The cartoon of the blob?
Oh.
You just got yourself. You beat me on your own mom. I can't even compete.
Before we wrap things up, Aaron, I want to ask you, what are you drawing?
I'm drawing tomorrow's March of the Robots.
Ooh.
Cool.
It's always good to be a day ahead.
All right.
Don't tell anybody.
And I got a free idea I want to throw out at Hasbro, this whole Kickstarter thing. I know a thing or two about Kickstarter.
Are they listening?
I'm going to throw a thing.
Probably not.
This is how you do the USS flag, right? You do the USS flag, but then you give it an extra set of stickers to make it into broadside. Done. Now you're appealing to two types of collectors.
Legit.
I see.
But how many opportunities over the last 30 years have they had to mix G.I. Joe and Transformers? And very seldomly have we had that happen. It's like we had, in recent years, the only thing I can think of is Viper. The combined
the exclusive Comic-Con sets.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm talking about general Witcher. Release. Yeah. But I mean,
the word from the, you know, we talked about this while we were there, and the G.I. Joe team was all for it, but it seemed the Transformers design team was always against it.
Well, it was tricky because there were two things that people wanted, and they were competing ideas sometimes. Somebody always wanted true scale, so we want 3¾-inch G.I. Joe figures that fit into vehicles. Well, hell, even the mask vehicles were smaller, you know, so that you could do that. It's hard to transform a giant vehicle and keep a low price point. You know, that just ain't going to happen. So, you know, you start looking at motorcycles and stuff, and it just wasn't ever sexy. And then once you start adding Transformer, then, you know, you involve Takara, and then, you know, this co-developed thing between G.I. Joe and Hasbro or Transformers. Hasbro's really paying more for G.I. Joe than they need to be in some ways. And that's talking inside pool a little bit, but, you know, it just didn't make sense internally to mix those brands too often. And that's why the ones you see don't have transforming figures in them most of the time. They're just G.I. Joe figures decoed as Starscream or Soundwave or whomever, because they don't transform. Once they transform, it's a whole different ballgame.
I always assumed it was because the Transformers brand didn't want the stink of G.I. Joe's failure getting all over their stuff.
That was part of it. Yeah, that was absolutely part of it.
I'm just talking shit.
There was so much going on with Transformers that G.I. Joe felt like it was in a perpetual reinvention while not changing, if I can say it that way. And that, you know, that's just how it went. So there was never a reason to
The Joe guys wanted
peanut butter and chocolate together in this case.
The Joe guys wanted to capitalize off the success of Transformers.
Sure.
Transformers guys didn't need the Joe guys.
Sure. But the business didn't need it either.
But it would be cool.
Business and maybe not actually helping the G.I. Joe business any more than by not doing it in the first place. For the amount of money you would have spent. And all that, you know, those types of products are just, it's a wash, money be made, but no reason to do it. There's other ways to make better money.
To kind of bring it back briefly here to on topic before, I guess, you know, we probably are wrapping up, but with, you know, as adult collectors are more and more of a thing. And, you know, there was a time when Hasbro told collectors at BotCon, you know, they said it nicer than this, but I'm going to paraphrase, you know, you guys aren't important to us, so we're not catering to you. I really feel that's kind of changed lately. With
Aaron sitting there like, I'm the one that was saying.
Was it? I can't remember who it was, but that came out on Netflix, each of the brands, the toys that made us hit, skyrocketed those markets. And I kind of feel that it might give a chance for, you know, more dedicated toy stores, even potentially with brick-and-mortar presences, some sort of leg to stand on in the nostalgia market, if nothing else, as time goes on. I mean, who knows? It may be too late for brick and mortar, but I did find that interesting, the effect that the toys that made us had on those lines. And G.I. Joe was one of them.
Yeah.
Has it been quantified? Well,
people forget. They don't go to Toys R Us every day or every week or every month, you know, or get online, you know, and look up their childhood favorites. You know, some of these guys don't even know G.I. Joe never stopped getting made, right? So when those shows come out, it does rekindle like, oh, I had those, or I remember that. Most of us grew, you know, kind of went different ways. We stayed with it and were enamored with these stories and these characters and stuff. So we know everything that's going on. It definitely did awaken old time collectors. I could see how that happened.
Rob, to your point, I think if there were smaller specialty stores that cater to adult collectors, I would be on board. I'm not sure what would sway me from shopping online instead, but if there was something there where you could guarantee that there'd be some stock of something that I would actually be interested in, I would definitely be on board. I don't know what that other extra piece is to make it so I'm not online, to make it so I'm going in the store. But if that piece ever gets figured out, I'm down for it.
Aren't you worried that stores like that are just going to turn into distribution hubs for Funko Pops?
And Pops have to factor into the equation now because of what they are. But, you know,
Funko Pops.
If I could go somewhere and there's a giant wall of Pops, but on the other side there's actually a section of Transformers or Marvel Legends or Star Wars that has regularly rotating stock that I can actually go in there, you know, every couple of weeks and find something new.
Right,
or every couple months and
that deluxe figure is priced at $25.99 or $29.99.
Well, exactly. What's the extra piece? What's the extra experience of going to that place that convinced me to pay that premium? I don't know what that is yet, but something about social interaction, or if it was like a
Hooters
coffee shop or bar thing that also was toys or something. I think there's room for a market like that, but as far as stuff like Toys R Us is, where it's less focused, even though it's just focused on toys, I say good riddance.
Wow.
Maybe that's my hatred of children, but
just a bunch
of... He really hates children.
Goddamn yuppie millennials that don't appreciate...
Well, yeah, besides yuppie millennial things. You guys have all been
to Toys R Us. My son's first word was Toys R Us. Quite literally.
I was born in a Toys R Us, all right?
Okay, so do the Toys R Us's you guys go to, are they always dark?
No, the local one here was always brightly lit, as well as the one in Lakeland.
There was one in Cincinnati that was dark that I remember.
Ours was brightly lit, so you could see
those. It's a depressing place.
they wanted you to be able to see those empty shelves really nice and cleanly in ours.
It's always dark and dirty. No, whichever one I go into, there's like five relatively near me. And it's always dark and dirty and depressing. And there's always some family in there just letting their kids run wild. I'm just like, why did I come to this hellhole?
Well, so, and to yeah, that end, Reddit, for the kids, I mean, they'll be just as enamored with the colors at Target that they are at Toys R Us. They'll be just enamored with the bright big eyes and the buttons and lights flashing as they are at a Toys R Us. So, yeah, it's not like that part of the experience won't change for children per se.
I think there's also room, you know, like I was saying, for the adult toy store. Not that sounds dirty. Not what I meant. Yeah. The collector toy store.
That Neximus Maximus.
I think there's room for a kid version of that too. I don't know what that is. Locally here we have a store called Toyco that is kind of that way, but they sell like the more kind of expensive specialty kids toys, like the marionettes or the premium puzzles. Those guys. What's that?
It's a Melissa and Doug toy store, basically.
Yeah, that stuff.
Yeah.
So there's room for everybody. But not a room for one thing that is everything. I think you have to be more focused if you want to succeed.
Yeah. And you might see Hasbro and Mattel at least, you know, start, you know, when they offer different products to drugstores, you don't see it all the time at the retail. Other retail, you may see them slightly alter the types of products they can give to those smaller stores, but I don't know.
Now,
drug stores is about the smallest they deal with.
Like Walgreens with the clone exclusives that they had recently.
Yeah, I mean, because if you're thinking, I mean, there's one peg per brand, basically. So how little they get per store... magnify that, they don't really order a lot.
Having worked at Walgreens before, I know how they get their toys in, and they don't get a case per se. They all their stuff is shipped in plastic totes by onesies. It's like they will.
They've already divided it up.
Yeah, it's like it's like separated
for the thrill of the hunt. You go there to play the lottery, maybe to be surprised that you found something.
I did that last year.
You can't actually hunt there because you're going to lose.
Titan Returns Croc. The first time I ever found it was there. Yeah. I was like, what?
I did like 70 different Walgreens and tried to find them all. And I did. It just took a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's wind it up on something positive here. And it's I tweeted last night, what's your favorite Toys R Us Transformers exclusive? And I figured we'd go around here. I'll read Jason Tate's reply. He tweeted, Masterpiece Soundwave with all the tapes. That was a bargain compared to the cost of buying the original Takara releases and a dream come true as an OG fan to get the entire gang in one package like that. And I agree, that was a great one. But I figured we'd go around the room and hear different takes on this, and I'll start with Aaron. What's your favorite Toys R Us Transformers exclusive?
Rick, which one's my favorite Toys R Us exclusive?
Masterpiece Optimus Prime?
Probably.
MP01?
Yeah. I think MP10.
Yeah, if that was an exclusive at the time. I can't recall what was exclusive. That's why I asked Rick. We made products, and then they would get designated sometimes after the fact. Mm-hmm. So... I have a hard time knowing where these things end up. But yeah, if MP, the Masterpiece or 20th Anniversary or whatever it was called.
I think it eventually came out at Walmart in a different deco. But I think it originally was at Toys R Us. Yeah.
Yeah. MP01 definitely had some sort of Walmart release. MP10 was Toys R Us only, though, I'm pretty sure, which is the second version of Prime.
MP01 showed up at Walmart for the 20th anniversary of the movie.
With the DVD. So
two years later, with the DVD.
Yeah.
The first one was Toys R Us.
So, Rick, what about
you? You know, for me, it was just nice that we would get to do those things, because it was always fun to switch up deco or use names that you didn't get to use too often, or, you know, pull up odder things or opportunities. That's what I'll, you know, that'll be lost a little bit from those times, those exclusives. Leave you with that.
Okay. Rick?
I don't have a favorite exclusive product, but growing up, didn't have a whole lot of great memories of my dad, but there was one memory. I turned 4 years old, and my dad took me to Toys R Us, and I think it's the only time I'd ever gone to Toys R Us with my dad. And my dad, being, you know, a huge fan of World War II, insisted that I buy Hound. And so we bought Hound, and I still have him. And I got to take a picture of both my kids the first time they went to Toys R Us. And I'll have a picture of them the last time they go to Toys R Us, too. And
you're going to make me cry, man.
One of the, you know, going as a Transformers collector, going to Japan, it's like going to Mecca. You have to make that journey. You have to make that pilgrimage at least once in your life. And I got to go to Toys R Us Japan and experience that. And it's a completely different environment than what we have here. And I'm very grateful that I have those three Toys R Us memories to get me through the next however long I have left in my life, 5-10 years.
I've always wanted to visit Japan, and Toys R Us Japan was always one of the things on my bucket list, and it's sad that will likely never happen now. So unless something miraculous happens with a buyout and those are untouched, you know, that's sad. Christian, what about you? Your favorite Toys R Us Transformers exclusive?
Well, since Soundwave has been taken, I think I've got a tie. The next one would be Masterpiece Acid Storm, because what an amazing deco on an amazing mold. Love it. And then the one that no one would think of is Universe 2 Countdown. I love MicroMasters. Countdown is awesome. That mold is fun. And it was kind of a stealthy exclusive. No one knew it was coming. It showed up. I was like, oh, man, that looks so cool. And I went and bought him. He's amazing.
Well, what about Sunstorm, that the Ghost Flame deco?
Less good than Acid Storm.
Really? I thought the Ghost Flames were amazing.
The Ghost Flames are cool, but it's ruined by the brown plastic.
Yeah, it should have went with like an orange or a red.
Yep.
Robert, what about you?
You know, I'm a little bit of an Aaron side there. I don't remember what they have. But, you know, I don't have a problem piggybacking on people, though. And a lot of my collection focus is definitely going towards Masterpiece. So, yeah, the Soundwave on packaging, I'll piggyback on Tate. You know, that's pretty awesome. You know, I was really happy when I finally got MP10 from Toys R Us. It was a bit of actually an ordeal online because, like, it was coming up. It was going out. And then, like, Toys R Us New York was jacking up the price, and some people were trying to buy extras and help people out. Some people were scalping. You know, that one, MP10's U.S. release was just an ordeal. Like, that, I remember that. That was a thing.
I paid so much for mine on the aftermarket.
Yeah. You know, but I don't know if it's a good memory, but it's a memory. But the Soundwave release was pretty badass. All of them together in one. I thought that was a case of Hasbro really doing it right for G1 Masterpiece. When since then, I felt they've really ignored the line. So, which is unfortunate. And oh, good Lord, we're getting a show.
Yeah.
but you know, I'd like to. I hope that G1 Masterpiece continues to happen. And given that that was Toys R Us, I'm worried that Hasbro with Brand Unity won't let the line continue without an avenue for it. Because, you know, that Prowl anime edition was supposed to be a Toys R Us exclusive, I thought. Maybe not, but I'm...
It's Entertainment Earth now.
Okay.
Oh, is it? Okay. It will see the light of day. I think I'm going to cheat a little with my favorite Toys R Us Transformers exclusive, and it won't be a single figure. It's an entire line, and it is these guys, the Toys R Us Commemorative Generation 1 series. I absolutely I will never forget walking into Toys R Us in Lexington and seeing the Generation 1 toys that I grew up with as a kid back on the store shelf again. It was emotional. It was an emotional moment for me. And I'm sad that we didn't get more. But, you know, I mean, who can't say that they didn't like walking in and, well, if I can get it on camera here, and open it up and seeing the great, you know, great toys, you know.
I'm too young.
You're too young. You're just a pup. So
what's all that metal?
Yeah. Why does it have metal?
I like for the last 5 minutes of the podcast, Aaron rotates his video the correct way.
Yeah. Finally.
And then you have you know,
that's very Paul, cool.
Michael McConaughey autographed
nice.
This here.
That's really cool.
But you know, the entire
it was cool seeing them on the shelves. I had bought the Takara of box reissues instead, but that was still definitely cool. I'll agree with you.
It was definitely cool seeing a 3-pack of Insecticons on TRU shelves for $200.
That was the very first wave when
they offered them 2 years earlier for $40.
Yeah. The very first wave of the commemorative series was very reasonably priced, and I remember they sold out super fast. You know, so much so that I didn't get to see the Optimus Prime on the shelf. I actually had to buy it from another collector out of Chicago. But the rest of them, Hot Rod, you know, seeing Hot Rod on the shelf again, you know, it was very, very cool. And then with the second release or the second wave of the commemorative series, that's when Toys R Us stepped in and said, hey, you know, we're going to make these absurdly expensive. You know, it's like, how can you offer Hot Rod at $19.99 and then bring in Blue Streak for $40, you know, or $30? It seemed ludicrous. But we paid it because, you know, we wanted these toys, and that's, you know, that was what the price we had to pay. And then it did get stupid with, like, the Insecticons. That was just absolutely ridiculous. But seeing the Generation 1 toys on the shelf again was a dream come true for me. And, again, I was just sad that we didn't get more. And it just seemed like the line kind of eventually petered out. I forget, what was the last release?
Astro Train.
Was it Astro Train? And I found that one at a Five Below, or not a Five Below, but a Tuesday morning. Astro Train and Rodimus. I got it at a Tuesday morning.
And Ricochet.
Yeah. Whose bio was absolutely terrible, I tell you. Just...
Home Slice had contacted me and asked me to write that bio real quick.
Ricochet?
Yeah, that was the first thing I ever did for the Big H.
Is that for me or for Forrest?
No, Home Slice. Izzo.
Oh, Home Slice. Yeah, Home Slice.
Oh,
all right, Chief.
This little guy right here. Yep. But, you know.
Ricochet. Yeah, Ricochet is a funny name because we couldn't use Stepper. So it was being reissued, so I called it Ricochet because it was at least a throwback to the old
Target one. Master. Yeah,
yeah.
So was Stepper just not? Was it too generic, or do you remember?
No. This is the kind of thing that happens in the toy industry. There are little kid products that are like Steppers, or that name is used for like step stools or. Step ladders for little kids. So it just becomes a name that's being used by another toy company. So they have the lead trademark on it or copyright. And so that you just have to move on. So the Stepper was too, you know, just too generic almost. Or, you know.
Or couldn't had like Autobot Stepper or Target Master Stepper. Or...
Yeah, for whatever reason, we couldn't do it that way. Some you could do that with generic words. You can't do it with
claimed terms.
Yeah, kind of like Autobot Tracks, you know. It's
or Autobot Batman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can see that point.
Autobot.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah.
But you know, for all of the disappointments that we had, like the high prices and everything, we did have some things. Like the first release of Stepper in the United States as Ricochet, God Genrai in the Power Master Optimus Prime with Apex armor. We had never got that in the United States.
Yeah, that was fun.
You know,
White Astrotrain.
Yes. So it was a really awesome thing, and whenever I look back at Toys R Us, that's one of the things that will pop in my mind is the memory of seeing G1 toys on the shelves again in reissues, and then of course the masterpieces. You know, of course by the time you know Toys R Us got most of them, already had the Takara one. So, but what was you going to say?
So those are good examples that like a Walmart, you know, they worry about that type of product. That's high end product. It gets too dinged up in their stores. No one's going to buy it. Toys R Us have different attitudes. Those are the types of things that become tricky in the future. Not to end it on the downer, but those are perfect items. Why they were at Toys R Us and why at Toys R Us, could do things in a different way than other retailers. They were happy to take old retro product and different things like that.
Well, hopefully somebody else will be able to step up, but right now it's a big question mark who could possibly do that. Is there any toy store now that's in existence that really stands to gain from the closure of Toys R Us as a standalone that's like national or international?
For me, just in the business side of it, I see maybe the opportunity for a Kohl's or a, you know, Kohl's maybe store, maybe. Sorry. Yeah, well, those types of mid-range places, if they can eat up more of a unique angle on it, they could maybe take some of that share. If they don't exist either, then, you know, we're again going back to big bets on winning brands, you know, from the bigger retailers. Mm-hmm.
Any closing thoughts from anybody?
Downer.
Womp womp. Womp womp.
I was so sad Toys R Us was closing, I stole a shopping cart. I mean, they're not going to use it anymore. And then I wasn't too happy with it because it had like some hair like wrapped around a tire. So I took it back and I told the guy there, I'm like, yeah, I took a shopping cart the other day. I wasn't happy with it, so I brought it back. He's like, hang on a second.
And he
comes over. He's like, we got these ones in December. Take this one. I'm like, okay.
He's probably one of those employees that didn't care anymore.
Well, the last week I've been there, you could tell that they are, you know, their life isn't going so good. Their place they liked working isn't going so good. And then everyone shows up looking for sales and want to pick the bones. And it just makes them feel, I mean, they didn't look happy. They did not look happy.
Well, I do feel for people. I know a friend, a good friend of mine, he is a assistant manager at Toys R Us, and it's not been fun. He actually left a company he had been with for a very long time. He had been with them over 10 years, I think, to become a manager at Toys R Us, to become part of the Toys R Us family. I remember he was so happy for it. I mean, he even changed his profile picture on Facebook to the Toys R Us logo. You know, he was ecstatic. That was about a year ago. Oof. And now this. It's like a big slap in the face. And you know, just talking to him at Lexington Comic Con last week, it was almost as if he seemed distant about it. You know, it's like if he's a microcosm of what everybody else feels, I really feel for all the employees of that company. It's sad. And a lot of people's been there for many, many years. you know, it's not just a weekend job or a nighttime job for some people. It's their career. And we got to remember that the people, there are those people out there that this is affecting in that negative way. And I hate that. You know, we're sitting here talking, oh, well, it sucks that we're not going to be able to get toys in a specific way anymore. And we're not going to have these certain exclusives and what have you. But that's really selfish in and of itself. If we stop and don't remember the employees, you know, that sucks, you know,
it's been on my mind, but I didn't want to go there. Yeah. I think the only like positive side or not positive side, but the positive outlook there, you know, is unemployment is down and so it's very low. So I do hope and wish them the best of, you know, being able to go out and find new jobs to continue their careers. And I hope, wish them the best of luck. You know, I recently got laid off, you know, and I had a new job in 2 weeks. It was pretty really quick. Yep. So, you know, yeah. So
the people that work at the stores, to your point, I think they got, you know, there's opportunities I out there. You know, there's a lot of toy people, toy designer and graphic designer and marketing people out of New Jersey now who are going to, looking for jobs in the industry, and those jobs have been tougher and tougher to get anyway in the industry. So that part of it, Rick, that's the shakeup. Now there's excess. Now there's going to be a lot of toy industry people who just, there's not enough holes to, I mean, that's one way to say it, but there's just not enough places to go now. You know, there have been enough atrophy of toy companies as well over the years. So that's also, you know, a factor in those people, you know, those are toy industry veterans in a lot of cases too. So from my side, yeah, I definitely feel for that. Cause these are people who've probably already been chasing the dream. You know, they've already worked at a Hasbro or somewhere in New York or, you know, to keep in the toy business. So just another hit there as well.
You know, it's affecting a lot of people, and not just from, you know, a collector and a toy fan point of view, from inside the stores to inside the industry. You know, we got to remember everybody that is affected by this and hope that they are able to recover. However, you know, the executives are getting their $14 billion, severance pays, and, you know, and life is going to be extremely rough for them.
I heard that they might have trouble getting the fuel for their yacht that swims in the pool on their bigger yacht. So, you know, I hope they can make do.
Yeah. That right there enrages me, how a court system can allow that to happen in the light of something like this happening. You know, there's a lot of people that made them successful, and they're forgetting those people. And, you know, I don't believe in online petitions. You know, they never seem to really work. But my friend that works at Toys R Us, he shared a petition that is supposed to be for Toys R Us employees, and the people of the like. I shared it on the TFYLP Facebook group. If you know somebody or would like to be a part of it, who knows? Maybe it will reach somebody that matters. I don't know. But again, it's a last ditch effort trying to get something out of this horrible situation for the employees. So if you're interested in it, check that link out. It's on the TFYLP Facebook group. You know, I think I stole Aaron's thunder and ended it on a downer myself, you know, but, you know, I took the blame off of you. I took the blame off of you. I absorbed the impact, bro. But, you know, let's not forget Toys R Us. You know, it started, I believe, 1948, I believe, whenever it started. And here it is, 2018, and it's no more. Really sad thing. All right, guys. I believe that'll wrap us up for TFYLP. I want to thank Aaron for joining us again. Robert, Christian, thanks for rushing home. I know you were in a hurry, but I really appreciate it. And Rick, as always, you can just sit there and play with your beard. You dick. Love you guys, man. We'll see you next time on TFYLP. Good night, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
See ya.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.